This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. This is episode number 72 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
Did you guys know it's International Talk Like a Pirate Day today?
I did.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because I just found out an hour ago and I was like, why didn't we plan this? Like, we could have given each other like pirate names. We could have called each other like the girlfriend boot. No, it doesn't work. But you know, it could have been pirate themed. It could have been fun.
It can still be fun and pirate themed.
It can still be fun and pirate themed. So there needs to be, so when we're going through the episode, I think if we find things we agree with, we need to just yarr and.
I'm down with that.
See, Katie's got it. Chris, I don't think you're too good to yarr. Come on now.
I don't know. Pirates are not my thing.
That's a baseball team, Chris.
Yeah, and
they're from Pittsburgh.
They're awful. Sorry. We were just talking in the pre-show about how I'm not fluent in baseball. And I was like, oh, something I recognize. Pirates, that's a team.
Speaking of
which, more than I do.
The Cubs now lead the Reds, so maybe I don't have to, like, commit Harry Carey later. Yep. And Chris Coughlin, who I actually really hate, he actually made a score. All right. You're okay, Coughlin.
Chris Coughlin, what does he do?
He plays for the Cubs.
Well, I mean, like, does he throw the ball? Does he catch the ball? Does he slide into things?
He plays outfield, I believe.
So he catches a lot of balls.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay. See, this is my speed. I can catch up to this. So we are back. We took last week off. You know, it's funny. We took last week off because it was kind of a slow news week. And then in the meantime, the community exploded.
Mm-hmm. That always seems to happen.
That does seem to happen. I think it's a conspiracy. Like everybody's been saying, we planned the whole thing. And so we have a lot to talk about this week. And I thought it would be best if we kind of just went in chronological order and just kind of covered some of the things we would have talked about last week and then kind of branch off into what's happening now. So let's kick things off with you, Hallie. So you were en route to go to GP Louisville. You had said that you were going to work the GP. And then I was surprised to see that there were no articles from you and that you weren't there. So what happened?
Oh man, I've just had a really busy month, you guys. I've had too busy a month, I think. So I committed to going to GP Louisville in July. My boss had emailed me and told me that whoever was going to be covering Louisville couldn't anymore and that a spot had opened up. And at the time, I didn't have anything scheduled until the end of the year. So I said, sure, of course, I'll take more work. I would love to cover another show, especially since they told me it was Team Sealed, which is my favorite GP format. So I was all ready to go. And around that time, I had also committed to doing PAX. The Lady Planeswalker Society has had a presence at PAX for the last couple years, but Tifa couldn't make it this year because she was expecting a baby around the time of PAX. So she delegated the responsibility to Brittany and Alan Galenzi, a couple of our friends. But she also really wanted a lot of other seasoned people to be involved in it. So I, of course, said yes to that too. And it didn't really occur to me that PAX and GP Louisville were on, two subsequent weekends, the first two weekends in September, but I didn't really think it was too big a deal until, about a month later. I had been interviewing for jobs at the time and I had interviewed for a job, didn't get it. And then, had kind of moved on to the next thing when all of a sudden, at the beginning of August, I got a call from the company I had applied to and said, we had another opening and we want you. And I was like, oh, that's great. And told them, about these like commitments that I had and was basically told that, because I hadn't accrued enough PTO yet, I wouldn't be able to take the time off to go to these events. I would have to make up the time earlier in the week. So I would have to work 40 hours and then take Friday, Saturday, Sunday off in order to do these things. So there was a period of about 16 days when I didn't have a day off. And if I had made it to Louisville, it would have been more like 20 or 21 days without a day off.
Wow. 16 days straight.
16 days straight, yeah. So I basically, I worked a full week, and then I worked the week leading up to PAX, worked at PAX, so I worked three-hour days at PAX, and then went back to work the following Monday, and I was just wiped. Like, even while I was at PAX, like, there were days where, like, I worked at the Learn to Play booth from, you know, 10 a.m. until, like, 6 p.m., and I got off my shift, and I was told, hey, there's a party, you know, do you want to go to this thing? And I was just like, I can't. Like, I was just so wiped. And, you know, as much as I enjoy teaching people to play Magic, and as much as I enjoy interacting with people, like, I'm an introvert, it still takes a physical toll on me. And I basically, you know, went and worked that whole week. And by Thursday, I was just like, I wasn't like physically sick or anything. I wasn't like sneezing or coughing or having any of those like outward symptoms of being sick. But I was just wiped. I was just like, I woke up in the morning and I felt like I was only half awake. And I worked through that whole day, and I came home and I woke up at 4 a.m. to catch my 7 a.m. flight. And I got to the airport and I was just like, I can't get on this plane. I was like physically sick. It was not good. So I basically like emailed my boss and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this. And I felt really, really bad about it. I felt awful because I realized that, you know, I had taken on too much and I had done that to myself. And the thing is, I had taken on all these responsibilities because, you know, there's this sort of fear that if you don't do something, you're going to regret it. So I did all these things. I did PAX. I did, you know, I committed to Louisville. I committed to, you know, working four tens to make up the time. And I realized that I can't do anything. I can't do everything. Like,
yeah.
And the thing is, like, it's disappointing. Like, it feels bad to say no to something or to commit to something and a few weeks out say, I'm sorry, I can't do this. Like, I should have said, you know, I'm sorry, I can't commit to PAX, because that would have been the easiest thing for me to drop. That would have been the easiest thing for someone else to step in and do for me. But what is even more difficult than saying no to something is saying you're going to do something and then not being able to do it. And as disappointed as I'm sure a lot of people are, like, no one is more disappointed in myself than I am.
Mm-hmm. I actually, you know, I want to commend you, actually. You know, I think, you know, you had mentioned the feeling of disappointment. I actually admire somebody who can, you know, say, I can't do this. You know, I'm of the opposite mindset. I would rather somebody say, I can't do this, rather than do it and do it poorly. And like, you know, if you were to go and you clearly don't look your best, you're clearly not doing your best work even, you know, and people are saying to you, you know, maybe you should go home, and you're like, no, I've got this. And you're just, you clearly don't have it. I think the opposite is true. I think it takes a bigger person. And it's admitting that vulnerability that you said, you know, I'm really not cut out for this. And not only did you not want to disappoint yourself, but you wanted to do the best work you could. And I think that's pretty admirable.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I mean, I definitely feel like I have a lot on my plate right now. And so, you know, if people, I have people come up to me all the time and say like, oh, why aren't you writing more articles? Why aren't you streaming or whatever? And, you know, there are a lot of things that I would love to do. I just only have so much time. And when you're working a full-time job and hosting a podcast and doing freelance work on the side, along with all the, you know, day-to-day minutiae of, you know, cooking and cleaning your house and walking your dog and trying to get to the gym when you can. And, you know, it all adds up, and it's a lot.
Yeah.
That's how I've been feeling.
Yeah. Oh, you too?
Yeah. I mean, you guys could probably tell, but I've been kind of taking a break from Magic in the past month or 6 weeks. And it's been like, you know, you can't just go to school all day and learn all your school stuff and stream and go to F&M and go to these pre-releases and, you know, walk my dog and do the laundry and do the dishes, which are like piling up over there. But, you know, it just, it gets to be a little too much. And I've kind of enjoyed my time off, but I'm like, I think I'm going to try and make time for the pre-release. But I think it's just a good thing to like step back and be like, where are my priorities right now? Because, you know, you have to survive in life before you can like enjoy doing other things except just surviving.
Yeah, Hallie, you brought up a really good point. You know, the fact that even though, you know, you brought up a really good point of that, you know, when you're at these cons, you know, you're at PAX and you're at these GPs, you know, to some people, it looks like, you know, like somebody might hear this and say, well, you were teaching people how to play Magic for 3 hours. You know, that doesn't sound very strenuous, but you brought up the social aspect that not only are you doing physical work, you're also having to entertain people. You're having to put that face on, which you talked about before. That exhausts energy too. And so even though you may not be doing something that's physically strenuous, you know, I've talked about burnout from GPs before as well, that that's a lot of energy and a lot of spoons that you're expending. And so, you know, when you're doing both, I completely understand that feeling of I have nothing left to give.
I mean, it was basically a full time, or it was essentially a part time job for the weekend, because they had everyone commit to working 8 hours over the course of the weekend at PAX. So I worked a full 8 hour shift. And at the end of that, I was just like, I can't be social. I can't keep this face on any longer. I need to go have some food and go home. So I've realized that, you know, if, you know, I continue to, you know, if our show continues to do well, if I continue to be a presence in the community and I'm asked to go to these, you know, these parties afterwards, maybe I can't work as a vendor at PAX anymore. Maybe I can't do both, because it's definitely a lot of social activity for me.
Yeah. Chris, can you relate to that?
Sometimes, like, I mean, I work all week, typically every other weekend, and then I go to events like as I can, and I'm just trying to cram as many in as I can right now because it's modern season. Once it's not anymore, then I'm going to be less committed to going to events, just because if they're not modern related, I'm not in it. But that'll be coming to a close pretty soon, so I'll have a little more free time to do things with people. Like, I kind of feel bad because on Saturday, I had made plans to hang out with my super good friend that I've known since sixth grade, and I have to ask her if we can reschedule plans that we made over a month ago because I forgot about the pre-release, and Saturday is probably the only day I can do it, so now I have to potentially ask my friend if we can reschedule a lunch date for Sunday, and I feel bad about that, like, legitimately, but I'm trying to, like, do both things so that I'm like, okay, I did this and I have to do this. And, you know, sometimes like I'll talk to Nick and he's like, you never have any time. I'm like, I know. So I'm trying to get better at drafting. So I'm trying to do that once a week. I'm trying to, you know, play to have things to talk about. I'm trying to play modern because it's my favorite format. I'm, you know, the podcast, I work 10 hours every Monday. And I tell you, I came home today and I was like, I just want to watch the Cubs game and die. Because it was just like, it was just a crazy day. But that's why sometimes I guess it's just good to just not do anything. You're like, you know, I could do these things I've meant to be working on, but I need to like find the energy somewhere. But I haven't felt like I was going to the funny farm lately. And usually... usually that's coming like after it's been like way too many things. So I think just trying to like find something that's like not stressful or very not using brain much is good every once in a while. Like if you're going to cram like a bunch of things into like a weekend or a week or something like that, to try to find something that shuts your brain off that you can still enjoy, or something that's like therapeutic for you so you can kind of recenter yourself and then move on to the next thing that you got to take care of.
Yeah, I have a really hard time saying no to things because I found a situation that kind of reminds me of my own. The great Joan Rivers, before she passed away, was in a documentary called Piece of Work. And at the start of the documentary, she didn't have a lot going on in her career. Like, she was having a really hard time getting gigs, and they were trying really hard to, like, book her for reality shows. And at one point, she shows you her calendar, and her calendar is empty. There's not a single mark on it. And she looks at the camera, and she says, "You want to see fear? I will show you fear." And she says, says, let me tell you what an empty calendar means to me. And she says, if my calendar's empty, she says, that means that I wasn't good at anything, that nobody cared, that I didn't achieve anything. And in a really sick way, that's kind of how I look at being busy. Like, when I'm busy, I feel like that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that means that people want to spend time with me. That means that I'm good at my job. And so I'm being asked to put in more hours, or it means that I'm being asked to appear on other shows. And I get worried when I have nothing to do. And so when I find myself in times of nothing to do, I genuinely panic, because in my mind, it means I did something wrong. So, you know, we talked about how when you cancel things, sometimes you feel disappointment. For me, I feel this fear of, oh God, if I don't do this thing, what did that mean? Did that mean I did a bad job? You know, in my mind, sort of a busy schedule is a really good thing. And I fall apart when I have too much free time.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that I've heard, a friend of mine who does a lot of freelancing told me that, like, the best thing that you can do when you have a lot on your plate is to specifically schedule free time for yourself. And that's something that I think I've forgotten to do in the last couple months, because I've just been, you know, taking on more and more responsibility and as long as it can fit somewhere in the schedule, I can do it. It's like, okay, I have this night free this week. Sure, I'll do this thing, or, oh, I'll appear on this thing, or, oh, I'll write this article for this place, whatever. But the thing is, as I said, I'm an introvert. I'm an only child. I've needed this me time my whole life. That's just how I am. I need time to sit by myself and just read a book and just kind of recharge. And if I overburden myself with all these commitments, then I never get that free time and I never recharge. And I'm always just on edge for, you know, weeks at a time. So I've learned that I have to just take sometime, even if it's just a couple hours a week or like an hour a day or something, to just kind of relax and not do anything. Because if I have all of my time scheduled, then I just can't function.
Yeah. And Chris, you talked about, you know, some projects that you've been meaning to work on. You did manage to update your blog.
I know.
You posted an article called RESPECT, That's What MTG Means to Me. So I know you've been noodling on this article for a while, so why don't you tell people what it was about and what inspired you to write it?
Let's see, I'm trying to remember like where it came from. I think I had just been having just a lot of feelings about just watching how other players like treated each other, and just like different experiences I had been exposed to, and I felt like it was an important thing to touch on, because sometimes it can be like a subconscious thing that we're doing, like we don't mean to talk to or treat someone a certain way, and, you know, just to be more conscious of it. Or even like I touch on, you know, being respectful to judges, because I sometimes feel like people really aren't, and they, you know, can be condescending, or they, you know, just kind of, I don't know, just kind of squicks me out a little bit. And it's like, hey, you know, these people are here to help you. If they weren't here, you wouldn't have an event. So, you know, I thought it was important to touch on that. And I try to touch on issues in the Magic community that are important to me. Or, you know, I try to show things from a different perspective so that maybe people can see it a way they never had before. Maybe someone's had like a poor attitude at events, or maybe they don't lose gracefully, or maybe, you know, a lot of things. And perhaps this can show them like another way. And like after I wrote the blog post, I had gone to an event where I met up with some of like the Madison crew, and like one of the guys there was like, you know, every time I play you, he's like, you're always very nice, and, you know, you're very genuine, and just all these things. And I was like, cool. I'm like, I'm glad, because I don't want, you know, people to be like, Chris is like a terrible person, you never want to play her, and be like, sorry, bro. I mean, I did point out, you know, within my blog post that, you know, I'm not perfect. Not by any means. You know, I've said things I shouldn't have said. I've had a lot of less than ideal thoughts in my head post games, or, you know, something just tumbled out like this past weekend. I was kind of like on tilt because I was going to win the next turn, and I just got. And I literally just said, are you fucking kidding me right now? And I was like, I shouldn't have said that. And I was like, my bad. But it just was like out of my mouth before I even knew. And it was because I think the deck's dumb. It's just stupid. And like, I just kind of lost my shit a little bit. But you know, it happens. Nobody's perfect. And that's why even when I've had people get a little tilty with me, I'm like, you know, they might not always be like this. You know, maybe they just had a bad day. And I just think it's important to remember that the people that you're playing against, usually they're not, you know, condescending, terrible people. You know, maybe you just got by their deck. Maybe their deck is really stupid. Maybe you played Lantern Control a million times during the tournament, and that's really unfortunate. But, you know, it's not that person's fault that you didn't win necessarily. And those are things I've had to, you know, come to grips with myself. And I just thought it was important to point out respect, because sometimes I don't think that other players are always cognizant of how they treat other players, you know, whether it's their age, their gender, their skill level, whatever it is. And I think that it's important to remember that at one point we were all learning this game and I had no clue how to play it. And, you know, it can be frustrating sometimes to have to take extra time with people or kind of not necessarily like guide them through. But I mean, I played a guy this past weekend who he never really plays Magic. And he's playing Infect, and he tells me that he had wanted to play Lantern Control, but his friends told him that was probably a little too advanced for him. I'm like, I completely agree. Like, I can't even imagine, like, you playing Lantern Control versus me right now, because you're asking me questions about your cards and my cards. I wouldn't even know where to start. So, you know, so that's basically where it pretty much came from. And it seemed like it was well received and that people, you know, either learned something from it or agreed with some of the things I said. And, you know, I just think it's a good idea to kind of put yourself in that place and remember that sometimes when things don't always go your way.
Yeah, I mean, you do write well. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really a pleasure to read what you write. And I want to talk about you. You mentioned your personal plan for how you conduct yourself at tournaments. And I want to read some of these because I think they're really good tips. You said, number one, assess the type of event and what the REL is. And I think that's really important. You know, I think a lot of people, I like just sometimes casual REL. Like, I'm actually looking forward to pre-releasing this weekend. I haven't played a drop of Magic in like 3 weeks. And, you know, I like my pre-releases very casual. Like, I don't like competitive pre-releases. I know we have a couple events around here that are like, win a case of Kaladesh if you can pre-release all weekend and not die. And I'm like, that's not my idea. I swear to God, it's called a stamina event. And if you go to like so many events, you get a big fuck off prize. And I'm like, that's doing a lot right now. That's not really my scene. And so, you know, a game day, I like my game days to be really goofy. You know, I'll build like a $20 standard deck and have a really good time. And so I think it's really important to sort of tailor, you know, your behavior to the kind of event you're at. Otherwise, you know, you can really feel out of place. Number two, feel your opponent out by noticing their body language. If your opponent does not seem talkative, you will let them decide when they want to communicate with me, but present myself as friendly and focused. You know, we've talked about that before, how, you know, I've experienced it where I'm clearly not happy that I've lost, and I get that opponent that wants to talk to me. And I'm just like, I don't know how to make this any clearer that I don't want to talk to anybody right now. And they're just really bad at reading the body language. And that's a really, you know, important skill to have, I think. And then you mentioned number three, if they seem unsure of something, remind them that judges are there to help, not be intimidating. Judges are the backbone of the tournaments that we play in. That is tip number four.
So I wanted to point out that I really like, Chris, how you put this in a list, because I feel like sometimes when we talk about being a better person or being more respectful, it's very cerebral. Like, I feel like sometimes it's kind of hard for people to be like, well, how do I do that? Like, myself. How do I apply this? And so I feel like putting it kind of in a concrete list and breaking it down like you did hits at home a lot more for people to learn. Like, when they read it and they're like, oh, I should look at my opponent's body language. That's step number two. That seems like something maybe I should do. And I feel like it just kind of sticks a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, I do think people are respectful. And it's kind of always the ones that aren't respectful that we remember, and not all the good ones in between. But I did like how you pointed out judges, because we have feelings too.
Yar.
And it's hard when we're like trying to figure out the ruling and somebody's like yelling in our face and we're like, well, man, can you just calm down? we'll get through this together, I promise. So I like that you included us in your little list.
Of course. Yeah, that's very important.
So Kaladesh is completely out. They just revealed the whole set on Friday, and I thought it might be fun to talk about, now that we're able to see the whole set, what our impressions are of it, and specifically what cards we're looking forward to. So Katie, why don't you kick us off? What Kaladesh cards are you stoked about?
Okay, so I saw some that had some really cool flavor that I wanted to point out. Because you know I'm not much of a flavor buff, so every time I notice something, I'm like, yay.
It's working. We're getting her into flavor.
I'm one baby step at a time. So there is a card called Glint Nest Crane. And I really liked it because birds are always looking at shiny stuff. And for this one, you can like look for an artifact. And I was just like, oh, that's so neat. Like, it's just, it's not even deep flavor. We're very superficial here, people, but I'm really excited.
No, I feel like that's unique to your line of work, though. You know, Katie, you work with animals, and like, I didn't know that. So that's you applying what you do for a living to magic. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. And I was just like looking through it, and I was like, oh, it's just like a bird. That's exactly what they do. And then another one was like Built to Last, which is a white card that, it's like a pump spell, and then if your thing is an artifact, it gets indestructible, which I thought was just kind of a cool little flavor thing. What I'm really excited for out of this set is the cards for like a black-white control deck. I've been noticing a lot of things that kind of make me excited. Mm-hmm. So there's a white card that I think is a rare, called Authority of the Consoles. Mm-hmm. And it costs a white, and it's an enchantment, and your opponent's creatures enter the battlefield tapped. And every time one of their creature enters, you gain a life. I feel like that'd be a really good card, maybe in a sideboard against, you know, green-red creature decks or fast red decks that are creature-based or, you know, whatever it may be. It's kind of like a Thalia without having to pay a whole 3 mana. And then I didn't know that there was a sweeper until today when I was looking through the set, and I got really excited because I love the hard sweepers. I mean, Languish was all right and all, but just actually killing them all feels really good.
But how does that make you feel, though? It's called Fumigate, and they're killing the...
They're killing the gremlins. The poor little gremlins.
Well, imagine if there was, like, gremlins living under your house and, like, burrowing into your kitchen when you're, like, trying to cook your pasta. And they're like, hey, girl, I want some pasta, too. And you're like, no, there's not enough for all of you. Just out.
But they don't want pasta. They just want to drive some vehicles.
Well, they can't drive it through my pasta cooking. Vehicles first,
pasta next.
I love that the veterinarian's like, y'all gotta go.
There can be a time when there's too many animals, believe it or not.
But have you really found that point, though? I mean, how many are you at right now?
Well, I got Muggsy and Watson and Weebles. And we might get another puppy.
Okay. So
so I'm not at that point yet.
Do as I say, not as I do.
And then Harsh Scrutiny is a black card that costs just a black, and your opponent reveals their hand, you get to pick a creature card, they discard it, and then you scry. That's a lot for like just a one black costing card. And I feel like besides Thoughtseize, there's not cards. I mean, we just have Thoughtseize and Duress is only instance or sorcery. So I'm excited to see one that's just creature cards.
Yeah. I especially like the scry aspect. Like being able to scry after you've just seen your opponent's hand, like that allows you to really tailor your play quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And then another thing I noticed when I was just like scrolling through, there's not very many vanilla creatures. Like I feel like they're all very dressed up. There's a lot of words on everything. I was reading a lot. And then I was just like, where's my tutu bears at? But I don't see them. I didn't know if that was just me. And then I had one last impression that's very random. But the dwarves don't look very short. I don't know if that's just me, but I'm like as tall as a dwarf, so I don't know if I'm a dwarf. But I'm used to WoW dwarves where they're like significantly shorter than everybody else. But I was looking through the dwarf cards and they kind of just look like normal people with me. I don't I don't know.
No, I agree with you. Yeah, they definitely weren't as small, especially when you compare them to like some of the other beings on Kaladesh. Yeah, I didn't get the feeling they were that short either.
Which is okay. I mean, to each dwarf their own, but.
I don't know. Yeah. I was told at PAX that I should cosplay as D'Apala, the pilot.
Oh my God. You would be a great D'Apala.
Yeah, I just need those white, those big pants. What do you call them? Like harem pants?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you can't wear them after Labor Day. Remember that?
I guess not. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll just do it for next PAX or something.
Hallie's like watching the calendar so closely. Oh, is it time? Is it time? Okay, it's time. So, Hallie, what do you think of the set? I know you're really big on drafting. Is this something you're excited to draft? What cards are you looking forward to?
I'm really excited for Kaladesh Limited. I actually watched the Loading Ready Run pre-release this weekend just to kind of get a sneak peek of what Limited was like. And I had a couple favorite cards, a lot of cards that got a lot of screen time. I really liked Cloud Blazer, of course, because I mean, Moldrifter is one of my favorite cards ever. So Cloud Blazer is a 2/2 for 5 with flying. And when it enters the battlefield, you gain 2 life and draw 2 cards. So Blake Rasmussen had a really sweet deck where he was basically playing blue-white flyers, but he had a Panharmonicon, which is the artifact that makes all your creatures and artifacts' triggered abilities trigger a second time.
Ooh.
So whenever Cloud Blazer came into play, he gained 4 life and drew 4 cards and ended up decking himself once.
Wow.
Yeah, well, he had a lot of, he had a lot of creatures with, enter the battlefield effects, and he had a couple copies of the aviary mechanic, which is the bear that lets you return another permanent you control to your hand. So he was just like playing the Cloud Blazer and getting his value out of it and then using aviary mechanic to return to his hand so he could play it again and draw more cards. I mean, what more could you want? Just drawing all the cards. Yeah. So Cloud Blazer was really cool. Another card that I liked that lets you take advantage of your creatures with ETB effects is Wisp Weaver Angel. It's a 4/4 uncommon flyer for 6. And when it enters the battlefield, you may exile another target creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control again. So if you have creatures with Fabricate, this is a really great thing to do, because if you want to make servos, you could just exile the creature, bring it back, get more servos. Seems pretty good.
Yeah.
It seemed like a lot of the cards that got benefits from you having artifacts were pretty solid. I really liked Syndicate Trafficker, which was one of the cards that Cam from Loading Ready Run had in his deck. He was comparing it to Falcon Wrath Aristocrat, and rightly so, because it's a creature that basically eats your artifacts and gets counters. So yeah, it's a 3/1 for 2. If you pay 1 and sacrifice an artifact, you can put a +1/+1 counter on Syndicate Trafficker and it gains indestructible until end of turn. So that's a card that I definitely want to play in Limited and possibly even in Constructed. So yeah, a lot of these cards were really sweet. I saw some really cool decks, and I'm just really excited to pre-release.
Chris, what cards are you looking forward to?
Well, I already want a playset of Blossoming Defense because I want to use it for Infect.
Chris.
But yeah.
Did I just hear you right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm hoping to bring my Bant Infect deck to FNM this Friday. I don't know if it'll be that good, but I'll try it out. Why the hell not? So I'm just sad that I'll have to wait on the Blossoming Defenses for another week afterward. But for a green to get +2/+2 and Hexproof till end of turn, seems good. So I definitely want that. Granted, I probably have never cast like a Mind Rot in my life, but I really like the art on that card. Like, I think the new art is really, really pretty. I also look forward to Reckless Fireweaver, because I like the concept of artifacts entering the battlefield and dealing damage to your opponents. I really think that there is a possibility that Blue-White Control could ride again with Dovahnbaan. I think that would be really cool. There's so many things that make Thopters and Servos, and I'm just, like, overwhelmed because I really wasn't planning on necessarily buying boxes of this set, and instead just kind of getting my rares and just a complete set of the commons and uncommons. But now, I don't know, I'm feeling all of the feelings because I kind of just want to, like, make Artificer decks until my, like, eyes explode, and I would love to open up some of those masterpieces because the new Steel Overseer just, like, looks like a badass, and I've never wanted to cast a Painter's Torment in my life, but, like, that new art is really awesome, and I'm just looking forward to doing the pre-release, if anything, just to get to play with the new cards, maybe see what I want to do for Standard, if anything. And I guess I'm just really, like, blown away by the whole set, because it feels like everybody's getting something. And that's something that I really enjoy. Am I really excited about vehicles? Meh. Like, it's just me. Like, some people are probably, like, psyched beyond belief because of them. They just don't really do it for me. But if it makes someone's day, that's awesome. I just want to touch new cards and smell the new smell and roll around in my bed with them. And yeah, that's usually what happens when we get new cards.
I think the card that's going to make, that helps, it's really going to help make Blue-White Control a thing is Skywhaler Shot. That's for 2 and a white. It's an instant. Destroy target creature with power 3 or greater and scry 1. Mm-hmm. I mean, it destroys Kalidus. It can destroy the Sylvan Advocate once it's been buffed. It can destroy Eldrazi Displacer. Instant speed and a scry, like, that screams control. Like, I really think Blue-White has a shot here.
Yeah. I hope.
Yeah, there's several cards that I'm looking forward to. Noxious Gearhulk, which is basically if Thregtusk and Shriekmaw had a baby, this would be it. I've seen a couple lists. Frank Lepore had posted one for Black Red Control, where you do this, Goblin Dark Dwellers, New Chandra, kill all the things, and then, like, bring them back again using that new Demon of Dark Schemes, which is entirely in my wheelhouse. So if Black Red Control becomes a thing, I would totally play that. Madcap Experiment, which is sort of like a red ad nauseum almost. I've seen some people talk about making, like, now, and I know I would never normally do this, but I've seen people building, like, red control decks in Modern with, like, Blood Moon, Chalice of the Void, and then you madcap into, like, Platinum Empyrean. And then when you find Platinum Empyrean, you don't take any damage from the Madcap Experiment. Yeah. So you have all sorts of funness there. And I was like, Simeon Spirit Guides. I was like, this is totally my thing. So I'm very excited about that card. I would love to do some broken things with that in Modern. Ovia Pashiri. Shout out to an older woman, a lady loving woman that they gave a card. Did you know her backstory? She has a wife and her wife died. Like, apparently they were making things together and then the wife died. Aww. And she somehow, like, she got over it somehow by, like, making her own creations. And I was like, shout out to Wizards. Like, not only do we have more older female characters, but we have one who happened to love a woman. Like, that's a big, that's diversity. Yes.
And that's awesome.
Yeah. And so the card is really fun. I know some people are really excited about making, like, creature token decks. And, you know, people were talking about building EDH decks with her. And I think she's fantastic. Eliminate the Competition. I have no idea what's going on here. If I'm understanding the art correctly, the person doing the stabbing is holding somebody's wrist, and then they're stabbing through their hand and dude's wrist. Why would you do that? Am I missing something here?
Wait, nope. What color is that one in?
It's black. And the flavor text says, open hostilities are strictly forbidden, but accidents will happen. So is the accident, oops, I stabbed myself, but I also stabbed somebody? It just doesn't make any sense. And I'm a black mage, and I'm really confused here. Like, so if somebody can tell me, like, what's going on there, I'd really appreciate it, because I just don't get it. And it's a very bizarre little card.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm looking at either.
Yeah, it's like, is it going through their finger? Like, I don't get it. It's but one black card that is very unusual, but I think is dripping with flavor, is Midnight Oil. That is the two in a black enchantment. It comes into play with 7-hour counters on it. At the beginning of your draw step, you draw an extra card and remove 2-hour counters from it. Your maximum hand size is equal to the number of hour counters on it. And then whenever you discard, you lose 1 life. I mean, the phrase burning the midnight oil, you know, you're staying up really, really late to try to get something done. That's reflected in the drawing extra cards, but eventually you hurt yourself. Like, you're not getting enough sleep. You know, you're becoming fatigued, and that card demonstrates that, you know, your hand gets reduced. So whatever you're drawing has to be really, really good. And I think there's just so much flavor went in that card. I think that's really great. Diabolic Tutor. Lily is the tutor. Mm-hmm. How fantastic is that? Like, I love that whole story. I love that Liliana's just sort of in the background, like, get him, Chandra, get him. I think that's fantastic. And speaking of Chandra, I have to. My favorite card is Cathartic Reunion. So Cathartic Reunion costs 1 and a red, and as an additional cost to cast the card, you have to discard 2 cards, which is what Dredge wants to be doing, and then you get to draw 3 cards. So you get to discard 2 dredgers and then dredge a bunch. And when I saw this card, I got tagged, like, my mentions immediately turned to trash, and for like a good 5 minutes, my jaw was just agape. Like, I was just like, oh my god, couldn't breathe. I couldn't deal. I couldn't even. It was kind of like I needed a cigarette, and I don't even smoke. Like, I looked at this and I was like, this is good love. Like, this is, and people around me who don't even play Dredge were like, well, guess I'm playing Dredge now because this card is broken. I think you will absolutely see play in Modern Dredge. I think there is room for discussion, as to whether or not it can fit in with Legacy Dredge. I think it could possibly replace Breakthrough. It's a really pivotal moment. You know, Chandra gets reunited with her mom. Pia's alive. I also like the fact that it's one of the few instances where you actually get to see Chandra's hair. In most of the art, her hair is pictured as being fire, but this is one of the few times where that fire has sort of died down. It's just hair. I was talking to Carrie, who's one of the Vorthos experts, and they confirmed that there aren't many examples of her like this. So she really is sort of letting her guard down to be with her mom again, and I thought that was a really great moment. Mm-hmm. So there was a post that came out the other day from a young lady named Brianna, and Brianna has posted in the Lady Planeswalker group before, so I kind of knew who she was, and she posted a blog post about her experiences as a Lady Magic player, and I thought this was a really good post. I'm always happy to see other women share their experience to see how they live and to see what they've been through. What did you guys think about this post? Could you relate to it at all?
I related to it so much.
Yeah?
This is not something that I talk about a lot, but when I first started playing Magic, I briefly dated a Magic player who was very competitive and who, I don't know, ultimately it didn't really work out between us, partly because he was very critical of me whenever I played. And I started getting better at Magic when A, I stopped listening to him so much, and B, when I found a partner who was just much more supportive of me. So I related to this very, very much. I think that, you know, even though Magic is a very personal thing, I think the people that we have around us definitely affect a lot of how we play and how much we enjoy the game and what we get out of the game. And I think surrounding yourself with a great group of people is really the best thing you can do for yourself as a Magic player.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. You want to be with people who are going to be supportive, bring you up, not necessarily like shit on your ideas, even if they might be a little wacky, and just kind of let you do you. I related with some of her post. Some of it I didn't, just because I haven't really been in too many situations where people were like, that's cute, girl, or, you know, talking down to me and making decisions for me. I thought it was unfortunate that her first boyfriend was kind of like not the greatest, but it was really awesome that the second guy she dated was like, hey, you know, you do you, you know, bounce ideas off me, you know, you can try things and you can fail. And that's, you know, I think how we ultimately all can succeed at this game, even if, you know, it's not something that works, at least you're going to give it a try. And I like how she also brought up that Magic is kind of like a personality type of game and is very individualistic. And I can definitely agree with that. You know, everybody kind of has their own reasons why they make certain plays. Even if they may not make a lot of sense to the person observing the game, if it makes sense to you, do what you like. And I could completely understand that. And I like how she pointed out that people should stop measuring success by, you know, your gender, because I think that that's a pretty awful assumption to make, that just because you're playing versus, you know, a girl, that automatically it's going to be an easy win. You know, and I know we've talked about things like this before, but I don't know, just the fact that people still have this odd notion is just kind of weird to me. And I haven't really experienced that too much. So, like, it's hard for me to relate to that completely. And I like how she pointed out that, that she wrote her post for all women, you know, no matter what their situation, you know, might have been, whether or not they're not having fun playing Magic right now because of things that they're experiencing, or, you know, if they, you know, love Magic and want to get better at it, or if they've been through harassing situations or whatever it may be. And the fact that she wants the top 8 at GP in the fall, holy shit, yeah. I just want to make day 2. Like, I'm just hoping to, like, crawl there. So, I mean, that's awesome to, like, set yourself, you know, a goal. Like, I definitely agree with that. I try to do, like, the same thing. Like, when I go to events, be like, well, let's just make it to this. Let's do that. You know, can we get there? So, I mean, I certainly hope that it does happen. The only thing that kind of happened to me recently that I could somewhat relate to is when I was drafting. I did a chaos draft last week, and it was okay. I had never really done it before, but the guy I was playing against was, like, you could tell he had probably at one point in his Magic career been a little more competitive than he is currently, but there was still kind of, like, that whole competitive edge to him. And it was like, we're just doing this chaos draft. Like, it's no big thing. But at the end of, you know, the game, he says to me, he's like, you know that you don't have to go find a land with the Trefo Carbinger. I was like, uh-huh. Yeah, I know. I just wanted to. Well, I just didn't really know if you needed a land then. Why are you worrying about what I'm doing? Like, I just want to go find a land. Like, just don't worry about it. Or he said something else to me, like, during the game, and I finally said to him, I'm like, I know how to play. Like, and he's like, oh, sorry. It's just like, if I ask for your, you know, criticism, I'll ask you. But if I didn't ask for it, it could be because I'm just not really that concerned. You know, I think that there's a good way to talk to someone about whether or not they want your assistance or your help, and if they don't. And I think that if she's with a group of friends that are supportive in that way and know how to be like, hey, this is something you could have done differently, or, you know, can I, you know, talk to you about this play you made or stuff like that, I think that's really good. You know, our group is really good about doing stuff like that. I know my buddy Ben always grills me about my plays afterwards, and sometimes there's a reason why I did it, and sometimes I just felt like it, you know? And I think it's good to have a good support system within this game, especially if you've had some bad experiences in the past.
Yeah, I felt like, especially about, like, receiving criticism, there's been times where, so when I go to, like, a pre-release or sometimes at FNM, I do consider myself a competitive player, but when I get in situations like that, like, I just want to play, sometimes I just want to, like, play goofily. And maybe that's not, like, a thing competitive players should do, but sometimes I sequence stuff wrong and it's not, like, on purpose. And sometimes I'll go fast, or sometimes I'll be chatting with the person, not really paying attention, and I'll make play mistakes left and right. But I don't want somebody being like, hey, you know you're not supposed to do that, right? And I'm like, well, whatever, it's F&M. And they're like, well, I thought you were better than this. It's like, well, that sounds like my whole, like, life is riding on this game. So I just feel like, going back to Chris's post, like, when people, when it looks like somebody's, like, enjoying the game and stuff, maybe it's not the best time to be like, you know, you should have done this at your end step and not on my upkeep. Or, like, you know, correcting them if they're just, like, having fun. Maybe that's not the best time for that. Anyway, sorry, sidetracked. But back to this. I really liked how she pointed out switching playgroups as, like, a bold titled thing, because I think it's a lot of, it's really hard for a lot of people to go find a new playgroup. And I know that there are some places where the Magic community is just not receptive to that at all. But I think for the majority of the time, like, if you don't like the playgroup you're with, or they make you feel uncomfortable or bad about yourself, or they're not supporting your ideas or whatever it may be, maybe it is time to find a new playgroup. Like, that's allowed. You can go do that. And, you know, I think people just kind of get stuck in the group they're in. Maybe they don't think another group would, like, let them play with them, or, you know, it's kind of like high school cliques all over again, but in the magic world. But I did like how she pointed it out, and she didn't really make a big deal out of it. She was mostly talking about how the new boyfriend is much more supportive of her. But I think it goes to show, like, just because you're in one situation doesn't mean you always need to be trapped in that situation. And if you're not having fun with the group you're with, maybe it's time to just take a peek at what other groups are doing during FNM or on your Tuesday night casual magic or whatever. You know, show up to different events than you might have before and just see what other people are doing, because most of the time people are nice and will be like, yeah, come play with us or whatever. And, you know, it just takes one initial step on your part if you want to change your situation. So I was really happy to hear that Brianna's doing a lot better now. And it's always good to hear from another lady planeswalker.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned, Katie, the difficulty that some people have, you know, removing themselves from bad situations or finding other playgroups. And I think part of the reason that people hesitate to do that is a feeling of defeat, where they're like, if I do this, I feel like I'm letting them win. If I do this, I feel like they were right and I'm not really meant to be here. And I've had a couple people, you know, approach me about situations they were in, specifically with their local game stores, where they felt like they weren't getting a positive experience there. And whenever I would suggest that, that was usually the first thing that would come up as, well, I don't want to feel like I'm letting them win. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel like I'm admitting weakness or I'm thinking I can't hang. And I really like the way that Brianna was like, that just wasn't even a factor for her. Or if it was, she didn't mention it in the post, but she was like, this is what I knew I needed to do and I did it. And, you know, I think ultimately just believing that there's better for you out there, and wanting better, I think is an amazing thing. I really like the way that she touched on the relationship aspect, because I have met a couple of women who I think have a lot of potential. But unfortunately, the call is coming from inside the house. You know what I mean? We're like, we spend so much time talking about the microaggressions and things that we face from like strangers, but sometimes we don't cover the fact that sometimes it comes from your own people, like your inner circle. And, you know, I've met a couple of girls where their dudes are really hard on them, where it's like, you know, what were you thinking? What did you do? You know, I'll see them at events and they're like, oh, he's going to be really not happy with me. Why? Like, what, you know, what is, who cares? You know, you had fun at this event. And on the flip side, I've known several dudes that feel like they can't necessarily pursue their passion because, you know, they have a partner who may not understand them or may not support them. You know, we've seen the rise of kind of the MTG dads, you know, like Mike Sigrist and Seth Manfield and LSV. I remember there was an article that came out at a recent GP, one of the coverage articles, and the first thing all those guys did was like, I have the most supportive partner ever. And I think that we really need that. I think people of all genders need that. You know, you need somebody who understands your hobby, gives you room to play it that you want to play it, and really just allows you to flourish. Mm-hmm. And so I appreciated that, because that's something we've never really talked about before. You know, anytime we've talked about people having difficulties, it usually comes from strangers. It never comes from like your loved ones. And this was something I'd never really seen someone touch on before. And, you know, the fact that she found somebody who games the way that she does and lets her play the way that she does, I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So listener question, we haven't had one in a while, but I thought this one was really good. Send your questions to thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Remember, it doesn't have to be about magic. We will answer just about anything. And this one comes to us from a young man named Matt. And Matt says, hello. First of all, let me say I'm a huge fan of the show and I've been following it since the very beginning. Thank you so much for that. Your podcast has given me a lot of insight into many of the challenges faced by women in the magic world and beyond. As a teacher at an all-girls Orthodox Jewish high school, hello. Your words of wisdom have also equipped me to better prepare my students to venture out into a world which unfortunately does not yet regard them as equals. That brings me to my question. I'm currently sitting here in between rounds of a Modo draft. My opponent just made a douchey comment at me before conceding. I thought to myself, wow, this guy's really insecure. And then I paused. You see, ever since listening to your show, I've gotten into the habit of using genderless pronouns as much as I can, or at least saying things like he or she and him or her. Normally, I would refer to my opponent this way and would recognize that I might be playing against a boy or girl. But I realized from this interaction that whenever my opponent displays negative behavior, I automatically assume it's a guy. I'm genuinely curious as to what you think of this. Is this reaction good because it's complimentary to women, or is it bad because I'm still gender stereotyping, or is it somewhere in between? Any insight into this would be most appreciated. Thanks, Matt.
I didn't think it was either good or bad. It's just one of those situations where I think it's just good to recognize that all people, regardless of how they identify, can just kind of be jerks. trying to think of like any specific situations where I'm just like, this person was horrible and used any specific gender. And I don't think I really do that. But I guess it does make you wonder like how often men or women can be, you know, brought into like a negative light, or like when you automatically think of a specific negative thing, you know, I guess what gender you necessarily think of. I guess it's no different than, you know, some people, like something bad happens, like a crime or something, and they automatically want to blame someone of a certain race or something more often than another. But I think it's good to try to be as neutral as possible, because you don't necessarily know your opponent's gender and stuff like that. But I kind of had to really think about this question kind of hard, because I'm like, well, it's not like good or bad. I think it's just one of those things that your brain just naturally, you know, jumps to. You have certain things that are just like ingrained in you from like birth, and maybe this is just one of those things.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the same boat as Chris. I think we're definitely primed to associate instances of men see what I did there. I think we're primed to assume that the people who do the harassing on the internet are men. Between, you know, the Gamergate scandal and, you know, men's rights activists and, you know, all these reports that come out about toxic masculinity, you know, the rise of the use of that term, there is a precedent that most of the people who are, you know, posting in forums and harassing people on Magic Online tend to be male. And so I don't think it is too much of a leap to assume that if your opponent is harassing you, then they are most likely a man. But then again, I don't know. I've never really been harassed much in Magic, in general, but, the few people who have made, you know, rude comments to me have been men, but then again, it's kind of a small sample size. So I'm never really sure, like, what kind of conclusions to draw. So, I agree with Chris that, like, gender stereotyping of any kind is, you know, it just shouldn't happen. Like, you shouldn't assume that your opponent is a certain gender. But I don't know. There definitely are cultural factors that could impact what's going on here.
Yeah, I felt like this question kind of went back to what we talked about a few weeks ago with wizards and the angels and demons thing. Like,
yeah.
Is it okay in our present day to blame women for being bad at things when everybody, you know, wants to make women feel inclusive, and we're kind of in this movement of progression. And while, so kind of just the fact of the matter is that there's a lot more men that play Magic than women at this point in time. And so odds are, like the literal odds are, is that your opponent probably is a male, when you are playing Modo at this point, just because that's what numbers tell us. But I do think, like, I don't think, Matt, you are a bad person for doing this, but I do think that it's not great to assume that when people do bad things, it's men. I do think that's something in, you know, our society's thinking that's going to have to change as our progression goes along. But I think it's very common. Like, I had never thought about this before until he brought it up, and it was like, oh, yeah, I do kind of think. Like, if somebody says, somebody did this jerky thing, and I'm just like, oh yeah, he's an ass. Like, oh yeah, I probably assumed it was a male. And that's, you know, I think that's something that everybody's thinking is going to have to evolve from, because, you know, in the end, we want to have all genders be equal, not just, you know, bringing women up, but we don't need to bring men down or any end of the spectrum. Everybody should be, you know, treated equal. So it's not fair for us to assume that if somebody does something bad that they were a man, or vice versa.
Yeah, you know, I can attest to this as somebody who's been, I've been harassed by people of every spot on the gender spectrum. So I've had trans folks be angry with me. I've had women be angry at me. I've had men be angry with me. And so because of my personal experience, I have no problem, with saying somebody was douchey to me and mixing up the genders with that. And I think, Katie, you really hit the nail on the head with, you know, if we're going to go for equality, women shouldn't be held to the higher standard, where if a woman is harassing somebody online, they need to be dragged and they need to be treated, you know, like we would if a man was harassing somebody. You know, we don't need to. I think there are enough instances in society where women are sort of put on this pedestal, or they're allowed to get away with things that maybe a man wouldn't be able to, and vice versa. You know, there are things that men can do that women can't. I remember when I was playing World of Warcraft just recently, some of the guys in my guild were telling dirty jokes on our Discord server, and I like a good dirty joke, and so I went to chime in with a dirty joke, and it was like, "Oh, Aaron, you're being crude, you're being filthy, you're being dirty." And I was like, "Well, if you guys get to pal around and mention parts and noises and smells, I get to do that too." And so I think if that's what we're going to go for, it needs to be across the board, where if a guy gets to tell a dirty joke and nobody gets to think anything ill of him, then I should be allowed to as well. If a man's going to harass somebody on the internet and we would drag him for it, a woman does the same thing. She should be held to the same standard. And I don't think it's necessarily complimentary, but I don't think it's insulting either. I think it's just sort of we talk a lot about things that are just ingrained in you and just the messages that society tells us. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you do see talk of going easy on women, you know, whether it be in a good way where you think you're doing them a favor by going easy on them in the game, when in reality, we just want you to play with us. We want you to play Magic with us. And so, you know, I think overwhelmingly the message is just equality, where this is what we want. It needs to be across the board. And so I wouldn't feel bad using she or her if somebody's being douchey to you on the internet, because it could very well be a woman. It could be somebody non-binary. And, you know, I think just as we're willing to kind of mix up the pronouns and we're talking about positive interactions or neutral interactions, I think we should be willing to do the same with negative ones as well. Because, you know, I mean, I'm a woman and I won't hold back with you. I'm not saying I'm being douchey to you necessarily, but it's like, I'm definitely not going to treat you any differently because you're a dude, nor would I want you to treat me any differently. You know, we talked about the angel and demon thing. I'm capable of being just as terrible as a man. I freely admit that. And so it's not outside the realm of possibility that who's being mean to you could be a woman. Mm-hmm. So, anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have a question.
Yes.
It's a little random, but I've been kind of stuck on it. Sorry.
It's okay.
What is a madcap?
I'm a madcap or a red cap?
A madcap. Because, we have madcap experiment, and I've been thinking about this since you, listed that as one of your cards you were interested in Kaladesh. And then I was thinking about madcap skills, and I was like, what is this madcap that keeps coming up? I don't know if that's like a little creature that's experimenting, or if the person in the madcap experiment is the experimenter. I don't know.
So
what
I just searched for it. I just used Bing to search for it, and it came up with two things. One, amusingly eccentric, like an adjective. And also it can be an eccentric person. So it just sounds like it has to do with somebody who's eccentric.
Oh. I was hoping for more gremlin type creatures.
I mean, if I were to use it like as an adjective, I'd probably think it means like reckless, like in a like really impulsive and reckless. But I don't know.
That's a little less exciting than I thought it would be.
Katie's like, I don't want to play with it then.
Gremlins can be reckless. They get their, you know, corrosive saliva all over things.
Red cap is a goblin though. I just googled red cap, and that might be closer to what you're looking for.
You mean like the murderous red cap?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to make mad cap a noun. I'm going to be like, you're being a mad cap right now.
Yes.
Sorry for that.
No,
that's all I had.
No, when I saw that, you know, madcap in the name, all I could think about was how much I hated madcap skills like a couple standards ago.
Oh.
It was the dumbest card ever.
Yeah, there's quite a few words in this set that, you know, people are having to. Verdurous, which I guess means like growth of some kind. So we've got that. Metallurgic summonings.
Yeah.
There's definitely some Googling happening here. Dubious challenge. Thriving ibex. What is an ibex? I don't know what that is. Confiscation coup. Some people have been saying coop.
Coop. You're play the Coop.
No, not Coop.
Paradoxical outcome. Wildest Dreams. If you play Wildest Dreams, you are obligated to sing the Taylor Swift song. I'm just calling it right now. There's a bunch of cards here. Like, I'm going through this more. Either Torch. Yeah. There's a lot going on with this set. It's very wordy.
We're going to have healthy vocabularies.
Exactly. I mean, we won't necessarily know what the words mean. People are just going to be using them without any idea what they mean. They're going to be like, so I'm going to go refurbish my friends for some coffee later. You guys want to come? And it's like, do you know what that means? Nope. It just sounds fun. Like,
but I think it's good to learn new words. I mean, there was someone that made a magic Twitter not that long ago where they were trying to educate people about words they had never heard of before. It's actually pretty awesome. They make their own cards and, you know, have words and with their definition, and so people can have a more extensive vocabulary.
I was at Starbucks the other day, and the barista screwed up my latte, and I gave her a ceremonious rejection. Ha. Ha. There's all sorts of...
I called her a madcap.
I was like, this wasn't what I ordered, you madcap. Yeah, so I'm looking at... trying to see. Right. Yeah, so I'm looking at some other... I mean, cathartic. Not everybody knows what cathartic means. I mean, I'm trying to see some other examples. Fragmentize. That's a pretty spicy word. Fragmentize. Mm-hmm. Fortuitous.
Ooh, I love that word.
Fortuitous.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's going to be a bunch of genius magic children.
I mean, even look at the red black removal card, Unlicensed Disintegration. That's quite a mouthful from Hero's Downfall.
It is.
Like, you have to target, I'm going to unlicense disintegrate this. Like, you know that's not going to come out. Man, we're all going to be getting a workout here.
So. Yeah.
So if anybody's enjoyed listening to the show, how can they find you all and how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalcanSan. That's HalcanSan. You can also find me on Snapchat at HalcanSan. And you may want to subscribe to the Card Kingdom newsletter. Because, yeah. I wrote something for them this week, and maybe I will in the future. So yay, you should probably check that out.
Okay, it's my turn, I guess. I just wanted to make sure Hallie didn't have any more exciting news. Right. I was, like, amped up and ready.
No, I wrote a pre-release primer for Kaladesh, and that's about it.
That's super. Oh, I'm going to be reading awesome. It, because Lord knows I can't build a sealed deck.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they come out on Tuesdays, so subscribe to the newsletter, and you'll get it every Tuesday.
Bam. Cool. Writing that down now.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at Mean Mugger. That's MeanMugger, or twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG, or you can Snapchat me at katie.neil14.
Did you cut your hair?
I chopped it off a little bit ago. I'm trying to grow it out, but it was like an A-line cut, so it was going to grow in unevenly. Mm. But now it's just really short, and I want to grow it out long.
Oh, so I just want to say I really liked your hair. I noticed it was shorter than usual, and it was very cute.
Oh, thank you.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter handle is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is yothkriz@gmail.com. Cryptic Command with K is for my Snapchat. And my blog is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. I should have a new post coming up soon that I am currently noodling on.
And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalEstrus. You can email me personally at OriginalEstrus@gmail.com. Snapchat Original Estrus, Skype Original Estrus, Twitch Original Estrus. I'm going to try to stream this weekend. I think people forget that I play Magic, so all I've been tweeting about as well. Saffron Olive posted a modern Enchantress list, which is right up my alley, so I think I'm going to stream that this weekend. GatheringMagic.com. Our show comes out every Friday. We are on Twitter at the GF Bracket. Patreon.com/thegirlfriendbracket. You can email us at thegirlfriendbracket@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening and being patient with us while we take a week off, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.